Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex, Justin, and Pete.
What's up, everybody? Alex Zalbin is a fool.
I sure am. Hi, everybody. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I am Pete.
And that's our man in the booth, Booth Man Prime.
Booth Man Prime.
Oh, gosh, you guys, there's nothing more professional than coming out and knocking your mic over right at the top of the show.
It's just a little bit of fun slapstick we like to do to start, to start the show.
Yeah, for those of you listening to the podcast at home, you should know that we're wearing ridiculous banana suits right now.
Oh, watch my tie spin!
Oh, boy! Oh, Pete, get out of that vat of pudding.
That was expensive.
Pete, you seem super into this bit.
Pete doesn't like imagination.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't imagine things.
You don't imagine things. Only the printed word for
that's right.
Page.
Yep. Yeah.
And a couple of pictures in the comic book sphere.
That's how I roll. Yeah.
What is your favorite type of art not in a comic book, Pete? Like, if you were to go to a museum, what would it be?
Right, like a piece of art.
Well,
like a real
piece
of art.
You know, right now, MoMA has a bunch of really nice stuff, you know, that I enjoy going to see.
Oh, good. It sounds like you're reviewing a comic right now.
Yeah, yeah.
MoMA has a lot of good stuff, really good stuff, emotional. Yeah. The cliffhanger at the end was crazy. I don't know what's going to happen.
I have, you know, Starry Night on my phone as a screensaver.
Oh, are you in college? Congratulations.
Yeah.
Slam! That's good...
Thanks.
That's good. And that's our 1 minute roast of Pete.
Yeah.
We're going to do 59 more minutes right now.
Here we go. Pete, what's up with that beard? Huh? Did a raccoon fall asleep on your face?
Oh, so many. Yeah.
But seriously.
Yeah, thank you. We have an amazing show to get to.
Yeah, this was a really good intro rev up for our guest. I think we set it up really properly. I'm actually very excited to have her on the show. She is the founding editor of Vertigo and the editor of the new book, Surgeon X. Ladies and gentlemen, Karen Berger!
Yeah.
Welcome to the show! Welcome! Hello. Great to have you!
Thank you for being
here. Hello.
Have a seat, microphone.
Please, come on in. Thank you so much for being here, Karen. So excited to have you here.
Very happy to be here.
Yeah, so let's talk about Surgeon X first, actually.
Sure.
So Surgeon X, new book, the second issue is coming out tomorrow.
Correct.
And this is...
Good timing for this podcast.
Right.
Yes.
We were talking about this a little bit before. This is not exactly your return to comics because you've been working on it for a really long time now, right?
Right. About 18 months.
Right.
Sarah Kenny, the writer, contacted me about 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So we've been working on it for a long time because it's not only a comic series, but it's also an app. So there's a lot more to developing it than you would do a standard comic. And also Sarah's new to comics as a writer. She's a documentary filmmaker. So this isn't her first, This is her first comic. So she's
Isn't her first rodeo, is what
exactly.
you're going to say.
That's what I was going to say. This isn't her first rodeo. So that process, learning process for her has been great. You know, it's been great for her. Just ask her. No, but it's obviously takes a little bit longer.
When you're as an editor who's worked with a ridiculous amount of authors at this point, when you're working with a new author, what tips, what tricks do you bring to the table, or is it different for everybody?
It's really different for each writer. I mean, I don't think I've worked with the same writer. I don't think I've worked with every writer the same way. I feel like I'm talking backwards.
Exactly. We're going to solve it.
It must be the show.
We make you very nervous.
It's because you have three people. I don't think I've ever been interviewed by three people.
Well, it's all right.
This is
before.
A
low pressure.
So
we have a little bit of a surprise for you. There's six more people.
We have Katie Couric, Donahue.
Yeah.
Donahue.
Remember him?
Deep cut.
Yeah.
So you worked on the book. The book is out now. What drew you to this concept in particular? And for those who haven't read the book yet, what is the concept of the book?
Well, the concept of Surgeon X, it's about a female surgeon in near future London in the midst of an antibiotic apocalypse. So essentially, there's only one remaining antibiotic left. It barely works. It's severely rationed. by the far-right British government. The story takes place in London. And so we have our doctor, Rosa Scott, who has been working for the NHS, the National Healthcare System. She's fed up with government regulations of drugs. This big rationing law has just been passed and has restricted the drug to the people who need it most. So unless you're productive to society, if you're under 50, if you're thin, if you have no health, if you're not an immigrant, you know, if you have no pre-existing disease or anything, then you can get an antibiotic if you need it.
And this
this disqualifies like 80% of the population. Yeah. So essentially she basically says, fuck you. Can I say fuck you?
Yeah, of course you can.
Okay, great. Okay.
Congrats.
Keep saying it.
Yeah, hey, Joe. Yeah, and and she basically says fuck you to the system and decides to open up her own underground practice to help those who really need it the most. And what really attracted me to this concept is the relevancy of it. I mean, this is a what if scenario. Yeah,
this is going to happen in like 6 months.
Exactly. I mean, and you hear stories of it happening already. But what I really liked about the character, where A was a strong female character, there are more female characters in comics than when I came in over 30 years ago. But there are still not as many as there should be. I like the fact that she doesn't have a superpower. She doesn't have a supernatural power. She is just basically a smart surgeon who's driven to do the right thing. But in the course of that, she develops a god complex. And
Classic doctor.
Both my brothers are doctors, so I can say this. Yes, exactly.
And someday when we get health insurance,
surgeons
are
the worst. I mean, actually, brain surgeons and heart surgeons are the worst.
You don't meet a lot of podiatrists that are god complex?
No.
They go in through the foot, and they're like, I run this body.
But basically, she, you know, very much decides ultimately who will live and who will die. So if she doesn't like your politics, if she doesn't like the way you handle a situation, she can basically say, hey, no, I don't think I'm going to, you know, work on you. And you're off to fend on yourself by yourself. So I like the fact that she had this ambiguous morality, but she does want to do the right thing at the beginning. And as time goes on, she devolves, and actually I was just doing the final edit on the fourth issue where she does something that's, you know, kind of big and not so good, to one particular person.
She refuses to operate on someone in a Punisher t-shirt.
Yeah, come on, man.
I don't know. Yeah, I know. She doesn't like superheroes.
She doesn't like your taste in comics.
So, but the other aspect of two that I liked was that it dealt with, there was a near future aspect to it, and you had, you know, this dichotomy of these great medical advances happening 20 years from now. But on the other hand, you can die from a simple cut, simple infection. So you have this great disparity where, you know, it doesn't matter that we have all these great futuristic things that could possibly save you if you get infected and you could be, you know, gone. So
Reading it to me, and I mean this as a compliment, it felt like a vintage Vertigo book in a certain way.
Oh, great.
I mean,
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it had all those hallmarks, and you've touched on that, where you have a fantastic concept that's treated semi-realistically. You have a morally complicated character. Was there any trepidation there when you checked it out, where you're like, oh, I want to do something totally different, totally out of left field? Or did it feel like this was a comfortable thing that I knew how to handle and grapple in a certain way, or something else?
Yeah, no, I mean, what attracted me to the idea was the fact that Sarah had this whole world that she'd created, from the government to the social aspects, and the main character has this whole family, who are big supporting characters in the book. She has a fraternal twin sister who's also a physician. She's a microbiologist. It's interesting, in England, they don't call, doctors are not called physicians. Surgeons are not called doctors.
What are they called?
They're called
Is
Mr.
Is it like a funny name?
They're called, no, they're called Mr. and Ms. and Mrs. and
oh, you
say, surgeons are not called doctors. And it really goes back to the old days where you would go to a barbershop to have your leg cut off because
Wait, what?
Yeah, because that's what used to happen. Just, seriously, this is go wiki.
You know, I went to the barbershop today, and you know what? There was a dude getting his leg cut off.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what, what is the deal?
It goes back to this really old, you know, this antiquated aspect, and that whereas surgeons didn't come up through the medical field, they came up through
the barbering
the
field.
Barbering field. So
well, it's just, I mean, a haircut's just
very
surgery
bizarre.
On your hair.
Yeah.
It's a hair surgery.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
So it's a big lesson to me that working on, and again, coming from a family of doctors, it's like, oh man, you don't even call, and they call doctors medics. And in America, the medic is like the guy in the field carrying the supplies.
Medic!
Is it right? Exactly. Yeah. But doctors are called medics there. I'm like, wait a second. No.
That was, this is probably me being totally stupid, but reading the first issue because I don't know if you guys know this, but there's no accents in comics. Like, you can't hear an English accent.
No, I bring every character to life in my head.
I was so confused at everybody calling each other surgeon and go to a surgery for probably the first half of the book.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I was
too.
Like, where's this? And finally I figured out, okay, it's in English.
We have a really great website, surgeonx.co.uk, which,
that's a big clue right
That's
there.
A big clue, that's right? Clue. And
they don't have M's in it.
Yeah, not only can you get really great backgrounds on each of the characters with a beautiful art by John Wachus and a nice kind of write-up about them, plus all our reviews and interviews and news about everything that's going on in the book, we do have a monthly column that's written by a different person. I wrote the first one, which was essentially what we were talking about, all these differences between doctor speak between UK and America.
So how does the app play into the comic book? How do they coordinate with each other?
Well, basically, you can go to the Apple Store or to Google Play, pay $3.99, and we are dropping the price for issue two. I forget exactly to what price, because since Sarah's British, you know, we do, God, everything has to be done
pounds,
in pounds first.
Yeah,
and
the,
you know,
Brexit,
and then,
the pound,
you know, and even like on this book too, I actually let her have her way when it comes to British spelling in the comic. Because all these years, you know, like in Hellblazer, I always worked with British writers. And
British
the scripts would come in and, you know, with your, not your, but like, color would be spelled with a U in there, and favor would be spelled with a U. And I used to, you know, tell my writers, no, I'm sorry, you can't, and this is America. We have to spell it. We have to spell it the American way.
In America, we don't tolerate you.
Yeah.
So, think about it.
When they were like, but he's a British character. I said, I know, but we're American publisher. And I was like, when I think about it now, boy, that was really stupid. But all those years, all the Hellblazer comics, even though he was British, John Constantine always had, and I'm saying it the British way, it's Constantine, not Constantine.
Oh,
so I will say it Constantine, though I will not let them use the U.
That's a very fine line. It's a very fine line you have.
I know, it doesn't make any sense. And I have my own sense of logic. But in the comic, and so in Surgeon X, I did let Sarah use her British spelling, her programs, P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E, and all that kind of stuff. And all the weird, like, single, the plural, singular, noun, adjective kind of thing that they do. They do, like, the crew are as opposed to the crew is, and all that stuff.
But
it drives me crazy, but I let her do it. You know?
British people be crazy. It's
okay. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I let her do it.
All the, time.
The weirdest thing, if you read Surgeon X, they pronounce it Constantine, though.
Yeah, it's weird. Mm-hmm.
So that's like, it's a strange
specific. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, all the characters are reading comics you edited also in the book, which is very subtle.
I've come a long way to allow British spelling in the comic.
Yeah, well, let's take a huge step back for a second.
Right.
And I'm sure you've talked about this quite a bit, but maybe not for our listeners. It's easy enough to introduce you as founder of Vertigo at this point, but when you were setting it up, when you were coming to the creation of Vertigo, did it feel like we're founding Vertigo? Or was it just, okay, we're setting up this imprint in DC Comics, let's try it out, let's see what happens?
Pretty much that. I mean, I had been editing, I guess, the proto-Vertigo books, or the Burger books, as they were sort of informally called.
That's a cool name.
From a lot of Burger books, I could have kept that. You know, Sandman and Swamp Thing and Shade the Changing Man and Doom Patrol and Hellblazer and I'm probably forgetting something really important.
Yeah, we'll add
Hellblazer?
Animal Man.
There were six of them. I think I got all six. And so I'd been editing those books from the mid to late 80s, and a few other Viva Vendetta. I finished up Viva Vendetta with Alan and David. I think like around 87, 88. And if some other miniseries as well, Screamer, which was actually our first creator-owned series. I think that we actually bought at DC Comics. Before Vertigo. Wonderful miniseries by Pete Milligan and Brett Ewins and the late, great Steve Dillon. It was Steve's first DC work with Screamer.
Oh, that's
amazing,
crazy.
Amazing book.
Well, not to get too morose immediately, but he did pass away this weekend.
I know.
Is there anything in particular you could share that you remember about him, positive, good story?
Steve is a consummate professional. He was an amazing artist. I mean, it's really hard to talk about him in the past tense. I mean, I have known Steve, since I probably met him the first time I went over to England. Even before that, he was actually in the States. So I think I met him in 1985 or 1986.
Oh, man.
So that's quite some time ago now. That's 30, 31 years. And he, just a natural artist, such a nice guy, great sense of humor, really smart. He was drawing professionally at 16. And I remember in my office in like 1981, 1982, Dick Giordano and Joe Orlando, who were two wonderful artists, also no longer with us. And Dick was running editorial, and Joe used to run editorial, and then was doing special projects. They had gone over to England to kind of hang out and meet these kind of cool British artists. So they sort of, invited everybody to a pub, and people brought their art, and gave them copies of 2000 AD and Marvel UK. And I remember Dick and Joe came back, and they were showing us a lot of these artists' work, and I remember them showing me Steve Dillon's work, and they said, "This guy is only 16. I'm like, God.
And just so.
Oh my God!
Is his style sort of solidified even back then?
It was just sort of like sprung from Athena's.
Yeah, it's
head.
Just his
Zeus's head, whatever. Athena sprung from Zeus's head. Isn't that how it goes?
Right, exactly. Out of somebody's
head. See,
I'm
talking backwards again. I don't know what it is. It's
now,
the Bizarro
did
show.
You, were you the one? Did you match up Steve Dillon and Garth Ennis on Preacher, or was that something that they brought?
No,
to
that
you?
Was Stuart Moore. I mean, okay. Garth was working on Hellblazer with Steve for several years, and they obviously really hit it off, and I think they had an idea to do something else. So now that was Stuart Moore, who was the editor.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was so amazing, and obviously it was ridiculously sad and shocking when the news came out that he passed away on Saturday, but seeing my Twitter feed and Facebook feed just light up with people putting particularly Preacher frames over and over again. And what I thought was so wonderful that people called out, I feel like we talk about a lot on the show how amazingly over the top his violent scenes were.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what people were really calling out was his more human scenes.
Absolutely. For me,
it's the expressions on these characters' faces are just so, no one else does that.
Yeah, the nuance. The detail. Like for Screamer, I posted a couple of pages on Twitter as well, too, some of my favorite pages. I mean, they look like real people, and the body language, the natural, organic way that people would move, and again, facial expressions. He was really such an amazing artist, great storyteller, and it's a real loss. Really, really great loss.
Well, let's talk about some other Vertigo stuff. The imprint changed so much over the time you were there. Where beyond that, though, it affected so many different other aspects of comics. I thought it was interesting in particular that Surgeon X ended up at Image Comics, because to me, at least, it almost feels like Image is the heir of Vertigo in a certain way.
It's the old Vertigo.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's kind of what I call it. Yeah, I call it Image today is the old Vertigo.
Do you draw a direct line there? Do you feel like Vertigo became this thing that affected the entire comic industry, or
Yeah, I do, actually, because I think that, I mean, it might sound boastful, but I think boastful in an objective way, because when you look at trying to be as objective as I can be about it, and I think I can be, when Vertigo came on the scene, there were few independent publishers out there, but what they were producing was just maybe a book here, a book there. Epic, which really was a precursor to Vertigo under Archie Goodwin, they had already pretty much run their course of publishing some really great stuff, but they only lasted for a few years, and before Marvel decided ultimately they didn't want to do creator-owned work. And, you know, Dark Horse had started up and was doing some titles as well, too. But Vertigo really started in such a kind of a big sort of thought-out kind of master plan. I mean, you had asked me before, you know, did I sit there, you know, in a corner and sort of concoct what Vertigo would be, or did it just happen? And so somewhere in the middle, in a way. I mean, I think the books, the sensibility of Vertigo kind of just happened, but when I was on my first maternity leave, I got a call from Dick Giordano, who was my boss, and said, hey, you know, we're thinking about everything you're doing here. Everything is great. We can't wait for you to come back to work. We really want you to come back to work. Please come back to work. And they said, you know, would you like to do your own imprint? Because retailers are really talking about these burger books. The sales are really good, especially for, I mean, these were non-superhero books, so anything that was not a superhero that actually sold was a big deal, was a big deal at the time. And people really want to see more of this stuff. So I went in for a meeting, we kind of talked about it, and I said, would you like your own imprint? I'm like, yeah. And so I went back, created a publishing plan, and it came together pretty quickly. I will give a lot of credit to our marketing department at DC at the time. We worked together very closely. But ultimately it comes down to the creators, to the writers and the artists.
What were the other name options for Vertigo? Were there a couple on the list and you were like, let's go with Vertigo?
Yeah, it took us a while.
Yeah,
to come
naming
up with something.
Anything.
Yeah, we had some. The Third Eye was one.
very
Threshold.
Cool.
I think Wild Blue Yonder, which
wow.
makes it sound like a Western.
yeah.
I don't know who came up with that one. It wasn't me. And, they were all kind of dorky, honestly. they just were. They were.
So what
but,
did you
And then Vertigo actually just came to me out of nowhere. I have no idea. I think I was just
standing on a high chair.
Pretty much, yeah, getting dizzy.
Terrifying.
And, you know, yeah, we're all Hitchcock fans at the end of the day, but it didn't even start from Hitchcock. It just... I like the fact that it evoked a sense of uneasiness,
yeah.
a disturbing feeling of looking at the world with a skewed perspective. And I thought it was a cool-sounding word. The V was, you know, it wasn't a soft sound. That's something else you'd like to think about when you're coming up with something you hope is going to last a long time. That
yeah.
you know, it sounds good, that, and also you have good letter forms. I'm married to a graphic designer, so you want to make sure that it, you know, and who actually, Richard Bruning, who actually designed the Vertigo logo. So so you also have to think of those things, how it will look on a book. Yeah, anyway, and then everyone, whatever. I think initially people at DC were like, really? But then they were okay. Okay.
Cool. I think it worked out.
I think so too. Yeah.
At this point, though, I mean, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but it's almost there's still the superhero comics at Marvel and DC and everything, but the whole comic world is Vertigo in a certain way. Do you feel like
so is TV?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
is genre fiction. I mean, and I think that's. I mean, I don't think I completely answered your question before. I think I rambled off, which I tend to do sometimes, especially when I'm interviewed by three people. So so I'm like, who do I look at?
And, here comes seven more people.
Yeah, right.
Let's get them out here, Donahue.
Yeah. But I think I would say the most important thing. I think Vertigo did a lot of important things, but probably the most important thing in terms of how it affected the comics industry is that it really made the writer the lead player, which is really interesting considering it's a visual medium. Not that artists aren't important, because artists, it's still a 50-50 thing, and you can have a great story and shitty art, and you know no one's going to want to read it.
Yeah.
But people, I mean, there always have been exceptions. There have always been really great writers, you know, in comics, obviously, before Alan Moore came around. But Alan really raised the bar in terms of what you could do in comics, how comics could be perceived. And once Alan came in, everything changed. And everyone was influenced by him. And, you know, it's kind of where we are today. And it's interesting how publishers would always go after writers, you know, in the past 10 to 15 years more than they go after artists in many ways. Superhero, you know, the superhero publishers.
Yeah, across the board.
So I found that to be really interesting. And, you know, it turned out at Vertigo, we ended up bringing in, one of the things I loved about being at Vertigo all those years is that we kind of grew our own talent. We, you know, outside of Alan, everyone was a new writer when they first started working for Vertigo. And you look at the talent that has come out of Vertigo, it's pretty quite amazing, pretty awesome. Again,
for so long.
They're the talented people, but, you know, not to take credit for that, but the fact that the editors that I worked with and I were, you know, able to find these people or they found us and you know, we're able to work with them in creating really powerful, lasting pieces of work. And then they have gone on to become the top writers in comics and outside of comics.
Even people like Scott Snyder, who is still...
Exactly, yeah.
He's a Vertigo guy, even though...
He's a Vertigo guy, yeah, he is, yeah. Yeah. Jeff Lemire.
Yeah.
Jason Aaron.
Yeah. I mean, the list
Mark
goes,
Millar. Yeah, also, yeah. He started off doing Swamp Thing, actually.
Now,
no, he didn't come out of Athena's head with
no,
a
he
million
did not.
Different
He did
ideas.
Not. He did not. Zeus's head. Zeus's head.
No, who's coming out of Mark Millar's head is the real question.
Yeah. Miller's world.
Yeah,
Miller's world. Yes. Yeah. No, Mark is great. I like Mark. He's great.
Vertigo launched some of the most amazing things. It's really amazing to have you here. What are some of your like favorite moments or like proud moments that you helped like come together? Or if you could just kind of like list some of the things you're like, oh, this was fun. This was a fun issue.
List.
Or, well, not, you know, just
name.
At least. Yeah.
Name.
Yeah, name. I don't, you know, whatever you can do. It'd be great just to kind of, just because it's so amazing from the outside to look at all the work that came out, you know, under your time there that is now heralded as some of the greatest comics ever, to just be on the other side of it, what it was like to kind of be there, you know, for Why the Last Man and all these amazing stuff.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, I, you know, ultimately, I just wanted to edit and publish comics that I wanted to read myself. I'm not a comics fan.
You have great taste.
Thank you. I'm not a comics fan, and I fell into the business. No, I'm not. And yeah. I mean, I like comics. I mean, I love the storytelling form. Mm-hmm. But if I'm looking for something to read, I tend to go for a novel first. I'll pick up a good graphic novel or a good comic too, but I tend to always go to the novel first. And so my sensibility tends to, again, go to non-comics stories to begin with. So, you know, I learned to love comics, and I learned to love comics pretty quickly after, like, my first 6 months at DC Comics. You know, so if I have to, like, pick what were my favorite times or what my list of favorite things, it's hard because I've worked with so many great people on so many great books. You know, Amethyst Princess of Gemworld, which was the first comic. Mm-hmm. House of Mystery was the first comic that I edited after I was at DC for 6 months. And then I got Amethyst Princess of Gemworld, which was a creator-owned book at the time. It was all work for hire, but it was not a creator-owned book. It was a original series. It was
right.
Not creator-owned. Because there were no creator-owned books then. But I loved working on that book because it starred a female character. It dealt with fantasy in a way that was very relatable. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't sort of high-blown, high fantasy, which I don't really quite like. But it dealt with, you know, a real girl being 13 on Earth and then a 20-year-old princess in this feudal world of the gem world, where each of the houses are named after the different gemstones. And it was a great dark fantasy, but with a lot of hope and optimism. And I loved working on that book. I felt like I was able to sort of pour myself into it. I loved working on Swamp Thing. I mean, Swamp Thing, you know, with Alan Moore and Steve Bissett and John Tolopin and Rick Veitch, those are some of the best times I had working on any comic, because I think we were, and this is before Swamp Thing was big, this is before Alan Moore was Alan Moore. I mean, Alan Moore was always Alan Moore, but but it was before that we all knew that he was, I think. And so it was just a great time. We were just having a good time, just doing stuff that people weren't really expecting, really under the radar. And, you know, but I've had so many great experiences on so many comics, you know, working with, even recently before I left DC, or, you know, people like Willow Wilson, G. Mm. Willow Wilson, who's obviously now, I mean, she's a novelist as well, but, you know, she's really made her mark on Ms.
Was
Marvel.
Was that part of the Minx line? Was that?
No, no. Air and Cairo.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Cairo and Air. Cairo was a graphic novel, and Air was a monthly series that I think lasted about 18 issues. Two really great series, you know, starring female characters and a, you know, mythical.
Air was amazing.
I loved Air. I loved Air. Yeah. I loved
this
Air.
This is probably nearly impossible to answer question across the board, but when you're looking for new talent, when you're looking for a new writer, is there something that jumps out to you? Is there something in particular that grabs you? Is there a defining trait across the board, or is it just...
It's my gut. It's really it's my gut. Right.
Okay. Gotta go with the gut.
It's a hell of a gut.
It's a hell of a gut.
Great calls.
Yeah, no, it's really... Yeah, does it speak to me? You know, and it's as simple as that. And undefinable as that, really. It's just, there's just got to be something about it. So it's sort of like a sixth sense, I guess.
So for any aspiring writers out there, just be perfect.
Go for the gut. Go for the gut. I got a strong
just
gut.
Just be undefined.
I guess
is a good
I do want to get to your guys' questions in a moment, but before we move on, so Surgeon X, second issue is coming out tomorrow, which is awesome.
Yes, exciting. We get to meet King Charles, actually.
Also, the reprint of the first issue is also out tomorrow. So if you miss
the first
issue,
that's true. Yeah, thank you for saying that. Yeah,
we're your street
team. Yeah, hey, that's why it's great to have three people interviewing you. Someone has to be remembered. Yes. Yeah, because we sold out of our first print run, so you can get another one.
What else are you working on?
Well, I am working on a couple of other comics projects with some other great writers and artists, but they're too early in the process for me to talk about them, and it's too early in the process for me to talk about where they'll be published, because it's just too early in the process. But I'm hoping that they will be out in 2017, and that's what we're aiming for. And so I guess watch this space or watch this podcast or whatever. Watch my Twitter feed,
it. Can you say whether it's new authors or people you worked with before?
I think it's too early. I think it's too early.
Two people that I've worked with before, but not in an expected way.
Scott Snyder is drawing a book.
That's good. No, it's your barista and a dog.
One of those is not people.
Huh? We'll see.
Barista. All right,
there we go.
We will see.
You're talking like me now.
There we go. All right, Karen, thank you so much. Yeah. And now it's time for your guys' audience questions.
Yes.
And for that, you probably know how this works, but I'm going to explain it anyway. So I'm going to come out to you guys. You ask your questions, and Pete over here is going to give you some free comics for asking them. So just raise your hand, ask a question, absolutely anybody. You, sir, right there, saw your hand first. What's your name? What's your question?
Hi, my name is George.
Hey, George.
Hello.
Hi, George. Hey, what's up? My question is, if you were starting over, like today, as a comic maker, what would you be doing if you were like fresh off the boat, out of college?
Fresh off the college boat.
If I turn back the clock 30 plus years, what would I be doing? That's actually a really good question.
Yeah, and we should probably explain, he's a magic genie who's going to grant this wish.
So. Yeah, before you answer correctly.
Yeah, what would I be doing? I would want to work for a publisher who allowed the writers and artists complete creative freedom, where the writers and artists retained ownership of their work, where writers and artists were able to do any kind of media deal that they'd wanted to do.
Hell yeah.
And you'd still be an editor.
I would still be an editor. I'd still be an editor. I could be a publisher as well, too. But yeah. I don't want to do all the business stuff. Because people have asked me since I left DC whether I'd want to start up a small comics company. I've had numbers of offers about that. But it would be from a whole publisher perspective. And I really am not interested. I'm really interested in purely the creative stuff. Not that I don't get the business stuff, because you have to be able to. With Vertigo, I really was, in a sense, a publisher of the line without the title. But I really enjoy the whole, at this point in my life, but you're asking me if I went back 30 years
ago.
I'm messing up the question. I just want to do kind of what I've done, which is just really great works in comics by a diverse group of people, men, women, animals, if they've
dog,
got good
see?
Talent.
Like I said, dog.
There we go.
Yeah.
Predictive.
Awesome. Justin P., what about you if you went 30 years
but to
back?
Really
30 years back!
I would definitely not come here to run into you, that's for sure.
Oh, my God. Really? Wow, terrible. What a terrible thing to say. You'd just be in your basement shouting at the wall, opinions?
Yeah, back to what I was doing 30 years ago before you guys ruined my life.
Oh, yeah, we put a mic in your hand. Yeah. The most dangerous tool of all.
Yeah, this isn't so bad. I think you really like being here.
You
like that couch. It's a nice couch. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm 22, so I can't answer that question. Cool.
That's a good question.
You raised your hand. Yeah. What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Brandon Medina, and I hope I don't come off as too greedy. I have more than one question. The first is, I was wondering, how much do you think Vertigo was influenced by the non-superhero comics before, the EC comics, Harvey Kurtzman's work, and obviously the British, I see with Vertigo, a very British style. I was wondering if you could talk about what you think,
well, I think
the British style was into you talked about how Vertigo, you think, influenced other things. And then lastly, I think Alan Moore, I think his style changed over time. He started with this really cinematic, visual-driven style, and I think as the years went by, he became a little bit more dialogue and text-driven, I think. So I wanted to get your take on that.
Mm. Okay. Well, I'll start with
a very different question.
I'll start with the easy question first. Yeah. What influenced Vertigo, which is actually a really good question. You know, a number of things. I think the 2000 AD writers, the British writers, who, again, you know, Alan Moore, John Wagner, even though John Wagner never even wrote for Vertigo, I think most people know that he co-created Judge Dredd, but he also did some really great graphic novels. He did History of Violence for Paradox Press. And John's a brilliant writer, and so many UK writers were influenced by John. And I think that sensibility, that kind of just very smart, political, but very lean writing of John's, very smart, economical writer. I think his sensibility, I think Alan's sensibility. And I do think that in comics, I mean, a lot of the Vertigo writers, most of the Vertigo writers were big superhero comics fans. So they were, I think, also influenced by other comics writers. But more than that, I think they were influenced by authors who, non-comics writers, by novelists, by screenwriters. What impressed me when I first started working with writers on Vertigo material was that the writers were really well read. They were interested in history. They were interested in the world. They were interested in politics. It was a different scope than a lot of writers that I've worked with before too. And a lot of it was the fact that, in many ways, a lot of these writers came from England and Scotland and Ireland and. You know, culturally, we're very different. I mean, we speak the same language, but we actually are very different in many ways. And I think that sensibility of sort of looking at comics and looking at the world in a different way sort of helped sort of imbue the Vertigo perspective. So part of it is a cultural thing. I can't think of any, you know, anything more specific than that. So that's the first part of your question. And in terms of the second part of your question, I mean, Alan always wrote fairly text-heavy, I thought. I mean, Alan is, I mean, he's a great wordsmith. But even if you look at his Swamp Thing stuff, it's fairly lyrical and lyrically verbose in places, but beautifully written. So I don't know. Alan's never been a lean writer. I mean, I think he's so good at the written word that he just writes it really well. So I don't know if you speak, if you're talking about some books in particular. I haven't read everything that he's done.
Well, like, so Providence.
Curse me that I haven't read everything that Alan has done.
There's a book he has out that is
Jerusalem.
Sort of
I
just
know.
Finishing Providence.
Jerusalem. Oh, Providence and comic. I'm thinking of his novel, yes.
Which is like, there's like 7 or 8 pages of just written text at the back end.
In
of
Providence,
it.
Yeah. I hear Providence is great.
I really love it.
I need to check that out.
Yeah,
it's to check that out.
But it is very. He tells
is that what
story.
You're referring to? Was Providence pretty much? Yeah.
I would say if you look at. Well, Watchmen in particular, I mean, yeah, there is a lot of text and he has prose at the end, but it's also very cinematic. He does tell a lot with the pictures. I saw there is a lot of text in Swamp Thing. I see, but I also saw a lot of moving the story with the pictures too. And it seems to me, I think the last thing was the America's Best comics. He was really, it just seemed like I'm looking.
He was writing a lot.
Yeah, it seemed like it was just pages and pages and pages of word balloons.
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't as clever as that.
He's a writer.
I pass on that question.
What about his beard? Was his beard always that big and thick?
Yeah.
Always.
Yes. Amazing.
Always.
All right. Great. Yeah. Cool. I think we could take another question. You, sir, right over there in the Superman shirt. What's your name? What's your question? Oh, in the Batman hat. There we go.
Yeah, everything. Hey.
What's your name?
It's Rolando.
Hey, Rolando. How's it going?
What's up? Hey, Pete. Hi, Justin, everyone. Hey.
Oh, I know you. You've been at the show a bunch of times.
Oh, my God. What is
yeah,
this
cool.
Romance?
And I always give you a super easy time about asking a question.
It's really easy working with you, Alex. Great.
cool. So what's your question?
Karen, so my question is there any particular book that you worked on that you really think should have done better than it did, or vice versa, another book that you were like, that did so much better than you really expected it to do?
Great question.
Right, you thought Sandman was going to tank, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Boutique project.
Oh, God. I'd say Salmon Mystery Theater was one of those series that was kind of unsung, that was a brilliant...
Great book.
I think it's a brilliant book that was around pretty much the same amount of time as the regular Sandman book.
Yeah, that did 60 issues.
It was like 60 issues, yeah. So I think it was six... No, it might have even been 75.
Whew.
I don't know. Someone's got to... be fact-checking me here. If this was a debate, you'd be fact-checking me here right now.
PolitiFact weighs
it. It's a 75 issue, so someone could look that up. But it ran for a long time. But it was consistently a brilliant book, first written by Matt Wagner and then Steve Siegel, with Guy Davis drawing most of the storylines, but not all of them. We had some really great... Actually, John Wachus, who's drawing Surgeon X, drew the second Salmon Mystery 30s. Theater story arc. So that's one of them. Air, as well, we talked about by Willa Wilson. Screamer, which we talked about before, too, the first creator-owned series. I mean, hopefully DC will put it back in print. I believe they still have the rights to it. Amazing, amazing seminal work. By Pete Milligan, Brett Ewens, and Steve Dillon. Oh God, there's so many. It's really difficult to say. I mean, I worked at Vertigo for 20 years. I worked at DC Comics for 33 years. So I've worked on a lot of comics. I really did thousands and thousands. And in terms of developing, working with writers and artists and editors and developing new properties, well over 350. So it's really hard to kind of pick and choose, because a lot of them do become your favorites. I mean, I didn't edit all of those books, but as executive editor, I acquired the books from specific editors and work with them closely in the development process, depending on how much work it needed. Sometimes it didn't need any, you know, depending on the writer and the artist. So, yeah. So, but I'd say Salmon Mystery Theater, Air, Screamer, Outlaw Nation. I loved a Jamie Delano series with Jamie and Goran Suzuka, very heady, old hippie writer, sitting out there in the wilderness, decides to come back to reality and his kind of crazy family. I love that book as well, too. There are so many of them.
The other half of the question, though, I think, was there anything that surprised you how successful it was?
Oh, geez. You know, no one's ever asked me that before, because it's always it's always the other question. Oh, man. Surprised me about how successful it was.
Runaway hit.
I'm going to have to come back to you on that. I'm sorry. It's a great question, but I'll think of something.
All right, stay tuned for the next episode of Comic Book Club.
Cliffhanger.
I think, can we ask?
We got one more. Yeah.
One more question. One more question from the crowd.
I have one. I'd say vamps. Do you remember vamps?
Female vampire
biker chicks.
Yeah, yeah.
Which sort of went against my sensibility in a way, because it was very over the top, and I'm not kind of an over the top person. I mean, one thing that when you run a line of comics, you need to obviously keep other people's perspectives and your other editors and other writers' point of view. And if you could see that's going to be a really great story, might not be your cup of tea, but if you think it works within the framework of what I want to do at Vertigo. I mean, I thought Vance was a great series, but I didn't expect it to really kick ass, and I did. We did a number of them. So, and it was really great too. And I really, you know, loved it. But it wouldn't have been my, you know, we were surprised that it did as well as it did. But again, it was a great piece of work, though. So, cool. Elaine Lee.
All right. Last question, you sir. You're going to actually have to stand up because the mic cord's short. What's your name? What's your question?
Kevin. Talking about the changes in comics, you know, going back from, you know, when you started till now. And one of those has been the influence on other media, you know, films and TV. As you see a lot of these, you know, things that you worked on, you know, moving into other media, you know, do you look at that? You know, or how do you look?
We live in a Vertigo world. We do. No, we were we started talking about it before, and then I think, we digressed. But I think a lot of it is genre fiction is being accepted, you know, in the mainstream.
It's the number one thing. The number one things are genre dramas.
Exactly. And I think, and weird shit, too. I mean, back in the day, storytelling, at least in the mainstream perspective, tended to be fairly safe and within certain parameters. But a lot of it also is the influence of cable and streaming and all these opportunities where you need more content to help fill the airtime. But if you didn't have the content, I mean, it's sort of like a chicken and the egg kind of thing too. I mean, but I think as comics became more legitimate as time went on, and you know, one of the reasons why you're probably doing this show, or why a lot of newspapers cover comics, is because people were teenagers when Vertigo came out.
Yeah.
And now they're professionals, you know, writing about entertainment or doing entertainment shows. So I think that influence, I think Vertigo hit the world at a certain time when, you know, it was right after Dark Knight, it was right after Mouse, it was right after Watchmen. It just all came from a certain place in comics where it just sort of exploded after that. Yeah. So I think it goes back to that.
I just want to clarify again. Well. I'm 22 years old.
I just
hope one day they do a Preacher TV series.
That would be crazy. I was actually curious.
That's really why. I mean, I think it's crazy that Preacher is a TV series. When I think about that book, I mean, I used to, you know, be like.
That book is crazy.
And what I used to do back then, I never sort of asked permission to do anything in the books from the publisher. I just kind of did it and waited for people to come down and yell at me. and that book, I definitely had some sleepless nights about Preacher. And then I look back at it now, and I'm like, it just seems tame. Not all of it.
Still got some pushers there.
But anyway.
Well, this is slightly related, but I think over the past almost 10 years that we've been doing the show, the most frequent question we get is, what do you want to see adapted as a TV show or a movie that hasn't been adapted yet? And one of the first things, if not the first thing we say, and then there's a lot of hand-wringing about it, is either Sandman or Why the Last Man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think they're adaptable for either?
For TV, I do. Yeah, definitely for TV. More for TV than for film.
Yeah.
I mean, Sandman was tried as a film when I was at DC a number of times. And just couldn't get there.
Why not? What was it?
I think it's trying to make one story out of... Again, you know, 70. How many issues of Salmon do we have again? 75 issues. I should know that. Neil was here. Neil would know that. Neil remembers every detail about every issue that we ever worked on together. So, I'm sorry, what was your question?
Sandman and Why the Last Man.
I think also, in the case of Sandman's such a literary comic that it's hard to translate that into film. I think you could translate it more into TV. I think you can slow it down. I think the thing with TV, you can slow down the stories. In film, you can slow down the stories. And Why, which is, I guess, more of a... It's fast moving, but then Y also slows down as well too. I think you just need the time to get the characterization, to get the themes, and
you got
to
get a good monkey too for Y last. Yeah,
and that's the hardest part.
You got to get that monkey. Yeah, but with CGI, you could do that on TV now. Or you can just get a regular monkey too. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them are pretty smart. They are. Did you ever read that book? Project NIMH, they even did a documentary about in the 70s. It's HBO did a documentary called Project NIMH about this chimpanzee who was adopted by a family under the auspices of a researcher at Columbia, a human behavioral researcher at Columbia. And this was the 70s, like anything went. And the monkey lived with his family and other kids. And it's actually a heartbreaking story. But they did a really great documentary, Project NIMH. But NIMH could be Yurik.
So we just if he was still alive.
I'm not Yurik. He could be the monkey. He could be the monkey. Ampersand.
The only thing stopping Why the Last Man from becoming a TV series is getting the right monkey, but we'll get past that. And
so if there's any monkey actors or monkey casting directors specifically out there, please send us
Concerning headshots. What's being done on TV these days, I think they could do it.
Yeah,
look at Game of Thrones.
They made a Preacher TV series. I don't know.
God damn it! Yeah, they did.
Just look forward to watching that someday.
You're a complete asshole.
You're a terrible asshole.
You're not watching Preacher.
I haven't finished watching.
I don't know.
I just had a baby though, so it's.
What does that have to do with that?
That has nothing to do with that.
That's you're a tough. All right.
I watched every episode. It was amazing.
Yeah, Pete had a sandwich, to be fair, and he watched all the Preacher.
That's right.
He's raising that sandwich.
All right, we're going to move on with the next section, which is trivia. For that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
Pete LePage.
Guys, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free. Who would like $25 free? A simple raising. Whoa. First hand up, guy.
Wow.
Come on down. You're going to win $25 free. What is your name, sir?
Connor.
Connor, audience, Connor.
Hi,
yeah.
Connor.
Yeah, hey, Connor. All right, Connor, so today's trivia is on Surgeon X. And nice. As long as you know everything about that, you will get $25. But if you were listening at the beginning of the show, we kind of went over all these, so you should be fine. So listen to the question. Listen to all three possible answers. Get all three questions right. $25 yours. Here we go. Question number one. Surgeon X takes place in the near future in blank. Is it A, London, B, New York, or is it C, the CW? So it's A, London.
A, London.
Yeah, nice job.
All right.
Nice. Congratulations. Here we go. Question two.
Is that an accent we're hearing there?
Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's great.
Who is Surgeon X? Is it A, Jane Foster, B, Rosa Scott, or is it C, Felicity Smoke? So it's either A, which is incorrect, or it's B, Rosa Scott.
B.
B is correct. Nice job. All right, here we go. Last one.
Well played.
Last one. Focus up. What kind of apocalypse does this comic take place in? Is it A, an antibiotic apocalypse, B, a zombie apocalypse, or is it C, a lack of watching Arrow apocalypse? So it's either A, which is the only thing that would be correct, or it's B, a zombie apocalypse.
Did you say A is the only thing that could be correct?
That is correct. I did say that.
Okay, I'll go with A. So.
Yeah, $25 for you,
really?
Connor.
Unbelievable.
Congratulations.
So those of you who have been to the show a bunch and listened to the show might know that Pete constantly tries to talk about Arrow and we don't let him.
Right.
No, we just don't have time for it.
Right, we always
want Pete to talk about whatever he wants, but we just never
sure.
have time.
Right.
So obviously we'll be editing those answers out of the podcast.
There we go. All right, guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. When you do, pick up Surgeon X number 2 as well as the reprint of number 1, right?
Yeah. Right.
All right.
Nice.
There
Thank
we
you.
Go. A couple of things we want to plug before we go, other than Karen's excellent book. Next week on the show, Howard Shapiro, the creator of The Hockey Goon. Is that
yep.
the name? Yeah, The Hockey Goon is going to be here. So that should be awesome and fun, and we'll
yeah.
probably fight, I assume, right?
Yeah, we're
that's
definitely going to fight.
Hockey is.
I can't wait for it.
Excellent. Yeah. Also, the show is free to come see and free to listen to online. But if you would like to support it, we have a Patreon account, patreon.com/comicbookclub. You can get rewards like stickers or sponsoring the show or some of our swag that we'll send to you, stuff like that,
yeah.
fun things that are going on. Or there's physically a hat literally here in the theater that you can throw a couple of bucks in if you would like. A couple of other things to plug. Pete.
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about all the amazing guests we have on the show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com, nerdist.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Karen for being on
yeah.
the show.
Yeah.
We want to thank our fabulous interns, Ima Bell, Tom Radar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. We want to thank Louis DC on photo. Where is he? There's
yeah.
Louis. All right,
Louis.
Louis. We want to thank Boothman Prime. But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night in New York, totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thanks, everybody, for coming on. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.